Well, good day and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the program this week. We've got a great show coming up for you. People are back from their various travels. We're back in the regular routine of recording after EMS World Expo and Joe's trip to Australia, and we're kind of looking to finish the year strong here in the Disaster Podcast. And part of finishing that year strong is making sure I have my strong and able sidekick, Sam Bradley. Sam, how you doing?
I'm good, Jamie. And of course, you know, the other part of our world is gearing up for writing our novels in November, and that's another topic, but that's kind of exciting too. But there's a lot going on in the weather, and we were just kind of chatting about how weather has affected all of us in our different parts of the country. So it'll be an interesting chat tonight. Looking forward to winter. And we've got Dr. Joe on with us. Hi, Joe, who just got back from Australia.
Hi, ladies. Sorry, that was terrible, but
that was pretty bad. But that's okay.
I want to ask.
It's like,
yeah, Kevin does a better job.
Yeah, it's like I'm Memphis sure. meets. I'm not even sure what kind of accent that was.
There's no telling what that was.
Memphis meets Aussie, or Aborigine or something. Well, that was Kevin back there. We have him back, Kevin Ryder, formerly of New Jersey, who is now in Texas, and our water expert. We'll talk a little bit more about that tonight. So what's in the news, Jamie?
Well, you know, we've had a couple of things happen while Joe was gone and right after he got back. We had Hurricane Patricia strike in the west coast of Mexico, most powerful hurricane recorded in the Western Hemisphere. It actually went from a tropical storm to a Category 5 with sustained winds of 200 miles an hour and in about the space of about 18 hours. And they it caught everybody by surprise. But this relates back to something we're going to talk a little bit about tonight, which is the El Nino effect and how it's affecting weather patterns this year here in the U.S. and is going to really affect how a lot of things happen, I think, and what we do. But Hurricane Patricia came through, followed another storm that was going through Texas, so it brought even more rain to Texas and down where Kevin was, and then across to the central U.S. and hit Memphis. And I'm waiting for the rest of that rain to hit me here on the East Coast. So we're going to get a little piece of that tropical moisture here, even all the way here in Maryland. So that's going to be something. We also had a major earthquake in Afghanistan that extended into Pakistan and parts of India and caused some significant damage. So many deaths and many injuries associated with that. It's just we always have disasters to talk about. And I think that that's one of the things Sam and Kevin and Joe, we've all been talking about here on the show each week, is that preparedness is really important for each and every person out there, whether you're a responder or a family member of a responder or just a layperson. You need to be prepared for the likely disasters that are going to hit in your community, because they just happen all the time and there's no saying when they're going to hit.
Yeah, and something you said, Jamie, reminded me, you know, when we're thinking more about rain and some floods and winter weather, but since you brought up earthquakes, oddly, the one small area in my county has had this huge swarm of smaller, like 2 and 3 earthquakes now going on for weeks. And it's just weird because it's been really specific to that small area. So we're not quite sure what that all means, but we really don't think about earthquakes so much in winter as we think about other things. But you basically have to be prepared for anything, because some of those things you can anticipate, and others you never know, because they're not specific to time of the year, and they're not specifically weather related. So Kevin, you got some rain down there in Texas, right?
Yeah, it rained a couple of days. That was about all that I saw. I don't know how much it affected the rest of the state.
But I saw a lot of like things about flash floods and flooding that came along and caught people by surprise. So that was interesting to see. So I wonder, you know, if other people felt the same way, that it really wasn't as significant as the news was making it all out to be, other than a wet event for everybody.
Well, is it not, Kevin? Right. I was going to go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, hasn't it been abnormally dry? Not exactly drought to the level of California having a drought, but is it not? It's a good thing, I think. I think Joe mentioned it, that it's been fairly dry in that area. So having some rain is good. You know, it's good for everything, as long as it doesn't get to flood stage.
Exactly. And I've got I believe it's a 60-square-mile lake, about a mile or less from my house. It was actually built by the Army Corps of Engineers, and there's a few rivers that are very famous that run through it. And I haven't seen any kind of damage other than a slightly elevated water table. In my area, I haven't seen anything that even comes close to, we're out for bread and milk because we're going to be here for a while. It's just, it was raining for a couple of days and that was it.
Well, what is the likelihood that that lake could flood, and how would it affect you if you're, I mean, I don't know if you're above it or below it or even with it, if you're a mile away.
I'm actually a little bit below it. But I'm right by the dam. The dam is about a mile down the road. And I know they're keeping an eye on the water table pretty much constantly. So I'm not sure how that would affect me, but I'm elevated above the road enough where I don't think it'll affect me personally, at least my house anyway. I may not be able to get out anywhere, but my house won't be underwater.
Yeah, you sent us some videos after we talked the last time, and those are pretty scary, how fast that water comes up and how little flow it takes to start floating things away. So, Joe, is it the same in Memphis where it's been pretty dry, maybe not drought stage, but so a lot of this rain is welcome, right?
Yeah, for us, it's we're 6 inches or so behind, so it's not a big deal, and it's been slow and steady over the last several days, so not really probably problematic. But I'll have to say some of those videos were pretty frightening about the speed with which when they say flash flood, they absolutely mean flash flood.
Well, one of them in particular is something I don't think we talked about, is the debris flow. And this one guy, I guess he's a storm chaser and also a photographer, but he showed this huge wash that was completely dry and then talked about how the debris flow would come followed by the water and then it would all dry up again. And that's exactly what happened. And he shot this whole thing. So I guess the debris flow, and Kevin, you could speak to this, is when it first comes through an area that was predominantly dry, it's going to pick up anything in its path, you know, trees, twigs, rocks, whatever else, cars, motorhomes, I don't know. Is that the way that works?
That's exactly how it works. I mean, I've seen it where it'll take down small buildings, houses, anything that's path, depending on the force it has behind it, you're not safe anywhere in that area. You can anticipate where you think it might go, but people have died thinking, oh, it won't ever reach me here. I'm safe here. And within a few minutes, they're in it and being washed away.
So it seems like that's one step worse than just water, because now you have things in the water that can hurt you, correct?
Exactly. You have tumbling trees. You could have a portion of a tree that may be 30 feet long. And it's fine, but that it's a rock that'll go, it's almost like a pole vaulter. It'll go flying, and you don't know where. You can't anticipate it.
Oh, that's scary.
Well, we'll have definitely, I know you sent us the links to those videos, and I'm going to include those in the show notes for this episode so we make sure that we give everybody else an opportunity to see some of what we're talking about. So make sure you head over and check out the links for this episode, show notes at disasterpodcast.com, where we'll have some of those videos linked up over there. And Kevin, thanks for pulling those together for us.
Hi, you're welcome.
So, Joe, what's the forecast for Memphis? What kind of things are you looking for? Anything unusual this winter?
I haven't heard too much long term. You know, I think for us, it's a fairly typical fall so far. So, you know, more rain is may start causing a little bit of flooding here locally, just because we're close to the river, and sometimes the drainage, you know, can't catch up, especially now that the ground is soaked pretty thoroughly. But I don't think we have anything really scary on our doorstep at this point.
Well, since you mentioned drainage, that's one thing that I keep reading about in California. Everyone is going on the assumption, and it seems to be pretty solid from everything I've read, that we need to prepare for lots and lots of rain. So that will certainly relieve the drought. But as you guys all know, when you have hard ground that hasn't seen water in a long time, it's not just going to soak in that easily. So they're doing a lot of maintenance on gutters and anything that would keep that water from flowing where it's supposed to go. There was an interesting article in our paper, I think the San Francisco Chronicle, this last Sunday, that talked about what to expect throughout the state. And it looks like Southern California will get the brunt of it, like 95% more, not 95% more, but 95% chance of much more than expected. And then it gets a little bit less as it goes north, but it actually goes all the way up throughout the state. So to the extent that that's good, and to the extent that that wreaks havoc with, and of course, we got the other issue of all the burn areas in California from all the fires we had this summer, that's going to create a mudslide issue. So that's going to be another big thing that we're going to have to deal with. So it'll be interesting. So what does it look like on the East Coast, Jamie? Pretty normal or anything going on there?
I know the forecast is, you know, the El Nino is bringing in all that moisture to the West Coast. What I've seen looks like they're calling for milder winter temperatures in the South and Southeast. And then, but they're calling for greater than normal snowfall and colder temperatures in the Northeast. And we're right here in the Mid-Atlantic, so split the difference. You know, we could end up with some major snow, or we could end up with milder temperatures or some combination of the two. So we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, I know that the El Nino event doesn't just affect the West Coast. It really messes with the jet stream going over the entirety of North America. And so it tends to pull the temperature gradients to different places than they're usually seen.
And as mentioned, that supposedly was the factor in the strength of Hurricane Patricia. So it kind of makes us wonder, even though it's sort of the end of the season for that, if we can't expect more hurricane activity or stronger hurricane activity. So that's yet to be seen. So Joe, what do you do? What are you going to do? What have you done to prepare for your winter in Tennessee?
Oh, I don't think it's anything out of the ordinary here. You know, we're thankfully don't have to worry too much about flash flooding and that sort of stuff like the West Coast is likely to experience, and, you know, massive fires and all that sort of stuff. So preparations here are pretty much as to be expected. For us, it may be an ice event sometime, you know, deep in the winter. But other than that, I don't think there's anything really significant to, or significantly different anyway from our usual preparations. But I'm definitely concerned about California and the whole sort of Southwest with the severe drought out there. And now the potential for lots and lots of rain coming right behind all these fires that have been going on, and the amount of earth that's going to move with all that is frightening.
Well, and we'd love to see you out here, Joe, but not because you're digging us out with your USAR team. That would not be why we would want to see you. So what is your personal preparedness? What do you do to personally prepare for the winter?
Well, I think for a lot of that, it's just, you know, it's enough stuff to get by. If there's a power loss, that's probably the primary concern. So it's, you know, food and water and, you know, food for the dogs and that sort of stuff. And, you know, batteries and the ability to, you know, keep your phone operational and that sort of stuff is really the main thing.
Kevin, what would you add to that?
Pretty much it. Food, potable water. Make sure I have enough blankets and cold weather gear, although I haven't been here long enough to know how cold it's going to get this winter. But I have everything I think I need, everything I believe I need, and we'll see.
I can imagine you probably have a boat somewhere. You're such a water guy. So if you had to float out of your house, you probably could.
Yeah, that's a few months down the road of working on that one.
So, Jamie, you're going to be colder than the rest of us. What would you add to
you? I'm with Joe. I mean, I have pretty standard winter precautions that I take here. We tend to do all right with maintaining power unless there's a lot of ice storms, which bring the wires and tree limbs down and things like that. But other than that, we're prepared. I've got a cord of wood delivered for the fireplace. So we've got alternative heat in the house if we need it for emergency purposes and just general ambiance. And then we also have, I'll be stocking up on a couple bags of rock salt for the driveway, making sure I've got the snowblower ready to go to, save my back and that kind of stuff, which is general winter precautions. But the other thing is, I have kids that are much more independent now, so I'm actually going to be preparing some basic put in the trunk kits for wintertime for them, including a collapsible shovel, a bag of kitty litter, which will help them if they have to try to get some traction if they're stuck in some snow. That kind of stuff will be going in the back of their vehicles because all three of my kids have vehicles now.
That's a really good point, and I was thinking about that earlier, so I'm glad you brought it up. You don't think about, of course, you think about worst case scenario where somebody gets stuck in a blizzard, and well, maybe that's a good question to bring up. So you're stuck in a blizzard, you can't go anywhere, the snow is falling. What do they recommend? Leaving the car on, leaving the car off, doing it intermittently? What happens when the tailpipe gets covered? Can you speak to that?
Well, that's why you have a collapsible shovel. So you can fold up and unfold the shovel. You dig out around your tailpipe. Then you turn your car on and you run it for 10 or 15 minutes to get some ambient heat back in the car. Then you turn it back off again. And you do that every hour. You dig out the tailpipe. Then you turn on the car, and then you turn it back off again, and you wait. And it doesn't have to be a major blizzard. I think we all think back to last year in Atlanta when they got that ridiculous ice storm that shut the city down, and there were people trapped on the interstate through the city of Atlanta in Georgia for almost 24 hours in their cars. And it wasn't a snow event. It was an ice event. So it doesn't have to be a blizzard and, worried about trapped in your car that way. I mean, these people just basically ran out of gas sitting on the interstate for 24 hours in their cars because an ice storm hit that shut down the city. So, and I don't know if everybody remembers that from last year, but it was quite devastating.
Well, and it was so unexpected. So I guess that's kind of our theme here.
Well, it wasn't as unexpected. It was unexpected because people weren't prepared for it. But it wasn't unexpected as a weather event. The weather people predicted it, and the city just didn't the city didn't shut down fast enough. And maybe got there a little bit faster than they expected. But everybody kind of blew it off because they don't get that kind of weather down there. Well, they did this time.
Yeah, and when it takes me back to Hurricane Katrina. When the weather experts tell you, you should do this, or you should evacuate, or you should stay in your home, they probably have good reason for saying that. So you would be wise to listen to them. And I think, Jamie, you're making the point too, especially when the parts of the year where there's inclement weather, keeping your car full of gas is probably a good idea.
Absolutely. I'd never let the car get down below half a tank in the wintertime. Because I just, you never know when you're going to get stuck. And I live in a rural area, but I'm never that far from help. I'm not like I live in, Montana or something where I'm going to be hours from the nearest person. But it just makes sense to make sure your car has gas in it in the wintertime, just because of the fact that you could get stuck somewhere for a couple of hours before help can get to you. And you need to know that.
And I think as EMS people, we, especially those of us that drive Code 3 vehicles, that's kind of the rule. When you're at a half a tank, you're empty, basically. So I think that's a good habit we've gotten into. Joe's asking, Kevin, what additional stuff do we need for water-related problems, which could occur in many places during the in the country? Not flooding necessarily, but just lots and lots of rain. Is that what you're asking, Joe? Is there another part of that?
It depends on your environment. What kind of water event are you talking about, like a flood or
flooding where you're trapped in your home? You know, maybe the floodwaters have trapped you but not come into your home, so you're basically going to shelter in place. What do you need to do to shelter in place during any kind of event? I think water events are very similar to that, aren't they, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, you want the basics. You want, you know, write down a list of everything you would need or you can think of, as far as medications, toilet paper, potable water, food, heat, or if it's summertime, you know, how to cool down. For water-related events, if you have any sandbags, make sure you have enough. Make sure you have enough of what you're going to fill the sandbags with. You can have 1,000 sandbags, but if you don't have any sand or anything to put in them, they're kind of useless. Go through and think and actually do a drill. Turn off the power for a weekend and keep a list going of stuff you didn't think about that you would need that you discovered, oh, we completely overlooked this particular item. Make sure this is on the list. So if we're ever without a power for, you know, 24, 48 hours, we can't forget this because it's really important. A lot of people put the list together, but they never do anything to test how prepared they actually are. And a simple drill at home, you know, unplug everything you have, turn all the lights off, and, you know, live there for 24 to 48 hours and make a list of things that you forgot or didn't think about.
That's a great idea.
I love that, except if you have teenage kids, they're going to drive you crazy, but that's beside the point. But that is the best way to find out. And another thing I was thinking, Kevin, is if you are in a flood-prone area, making sure a lot of those critical things are in higher floors. So if you have to evacuate to those higher floors, you know that stuff is there and safe and dry.
Exactly. And don't overlook the awesome value of plastic or some kind of waterproof bags. So if you have really important papers or things you can't readily replace or things that are irreplaceable, if you can, keep them on the second or the third floor and try and keep them as waterproof as possible. Because you don't really think to waterproof everything until it happens, and then it's too late.
And if you have computer files on a thumb drive or something, making sure you keep those dry, because that's another way of keeping that important information.
Yeah, that's a whole other aspect of things, but keeping a cloud backup of some sort of at least your most important documents, you know, whether you're using something like a Dropbox or some other, there are numerous versions of that out there that'll back up certain files on your computer to a safe location where you can get them if something were to happen. You know, the thing that occurred to me, and this is occurring to me with you, Joe, moving, and Kevin, your big move, is when you move to a new area and you don't really know what to expect, it's incumbent upon you to talk to either local emergency officials, planners, or your neighbors at the very least to say, hey, what kind of things happen around here? Is this ever flooded? Is this something that we need to be concerned about? What are the winters like? Because if you're new to an area, you're not going to be necessarily prepared for what to expect as each new season presents itself that first year.
Ooh, good one.
Exactly. And I actually did that before I moved. I looked up, there's an awesome website called citydata.com. It's city-data.com. And along with all the information about the average home sale, it has precipitation, how much snowfall, the average temperature, how much daylight, how much sun, how many days are cloudy versus how many days are sunny, all kinds of good weather information. But I also tapped about 30 people that I know in EMS that live in the area before I moved down to kind of get an expectation of what am I going to be getting myself into, knowing that Texas is typically warmer than New Jersey. I wasn't too sure about the winter, which is exactly why I moved down here, because I'm so tired of snow. I don't want to hear, make sure you have enough rock salt for the driveway. So I got a pretty good idea before I came down, and I made sure that I brought down things that I could possibly need in the event that I'm here for the every 20th year freeze. I have all my warm stuff.
So, Joe, I think Paragon ought to have a turn the lights out for 48 hours and see what happens drill.
Boy, that's a great idea. You know, that could be a lot of fun. You could ask a school to try to go through a day without power and all kinds of stuff like that. I think that's a great idea.
It is. It's hadn't thought about that. It's awesome. Thanks, Kevin.
It's a great training drill, definitely.
I've run that a few places, and I try and do it at least once in the beginning of each season. Back when I lived where there was seasons. Now I just have two, actually three, warm, hotter, and slightly cold. Don't have it just once, have it numerous times. It should be a constantly evolving thing, and the more you do it, the less panic factor you're gonna have. If and when the real thing actually happens, it'll be like just another drill, but for real. Again, that whole mindset.
And especially if you have older adults living with you and a lot of animals and a lot of special needs outside your middle-aged, healthy population that you may not have thought about. So, God, there's a lot of good reasons to do that. Except, like I said, your kids will hate you for it. I don't know, Joe. What do you think? Is that the newest thing on the block for Paragon now?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. We could host National Disaster at Home Day or something.
You're on to something. I think that's an awesome idea.
That's great. Ready.gov doing this as their new project.
There you go.
Well, I'll be available as a consultant if you're looking for any place.
You're hired.
Idea too.
Awesome.
You two will have to talk. There you go. Glad that came. How would that work at your house, Jamie?
I've got kids, you know, so they're going to be screaming bloody murder. And I'm just like, I'll say, well, did you charge, make sure your backup batteries for your phones were charged? I mean, this is what preparedness means. And I think that it would be a difficult lesson for a lot of our younger, more connected individuals out there. But it would also be a point to them to say, hey, this is why, you know, this is why I have a backup battery. This is why I have one I leave plugged into the wall all the time. And I cycle it in and out with another one so that they're both charged and ready to go. Because if we lose power for 24 or 48 hours, guess whose phone's not going to run out of juice? So, and I think that that's important because, you know, all the cell towers around me have generators that'll run them for at least 48 hours. I know that because we've lost power here before and neighbors, you know, I'm right next to one of the towers. So if I lose power, the tower loses power, but I haven't lost signal. So, clearly there's backup there and it's been able to maintain. So I think that it's important for us to, you know, to know that and kids need to know that. And if their devices are important to them, they'll remember to get their batteries charged.
And I think you make
a good point. The key word being redundancy.
We forget to plug in our chargers sometimes. Jamie, obviously you have that wire. Do you make sure there's one hot all the time? I have one that'll charge for several devices for 14 hours, but I'm sitting here trying to remember the last time I plugged it in. So I'm going to do that as soon as we're done here with this podcast.
Well, I travel a lot. So it's something I like to keep charged because I use it on the plane to keep things charged when I'm traveling and in the airports. So I don't have to find a plug to sit next to on the floor like some of the other losers out there. So, you know, I don't want to be that guy, right? He's sitting in the middle of the floor because there's a plug there, right?
I like every to sit in time a chair I like go a to human the airport. Being,
so.
Hey, I resemble that remark.
I was going to say, Joe's not saying anything. He's probably that guy. So, Joe, what's coming up for Paragon? What do you got going now that you're back from Australia?
Oh, goodness. We have a lot going on. We will be in Texas in December at the SOMA conference doing a little demo thing. We will be in Little Rock, Arkansas early I'm trying to remember, late November, early December for an active shooter class. And we actually have in about 2 weeks here locally a confined space and hemorrhage control day. So we got several things coming up. It's busy this time of year, which is pretty unusual.
Do you ever talk to your groups about preparedness? I mean, you talk about response and you're talking about that immediate response. I know you guys do a lot of education on those kind of things, but I mean, do you talk about general preparedness in any of your discussions?
It depends a little bit on the group that's there. Primarily if it's a responder kind of group, then they're pretty well versed on that already. But when we're doing education entities and that sort of stuff, we definitely incorporate more of that in there.
Well, that's good, because I think, you know, that's something that people should be aware of, that you can cater to whatever the group that you're with needs. And I think that's one of the things that makes Paragon such a valuable resource for organizations and communities out there looking to bring something new and different and exciting in to shake up things with their usual training routine. So folks, check them out and make sure you find out what's going on. Joe, if they want to get a hold of you and say, hey, Joe, this is what we're thinking about, can you do something with this? Where can they reach you?
Well, they can find us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com or on Facebook under the same name. And our Twitter feed is paragonmededu, or you can always reach out to us through the disasterpodcast.com.
Excellent. And Kevin, how about you? Where can folks find you?
Well, my website is wildsafety.com. I'm on Twitter at wildsafety. Facebook is Wilderness Safety Institute. And email is training@wildsafety.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on and sharing your expertise with us today, Kevin. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sam, how about you? Where can folks find you?
Well, you'll find me writing all next month somewhere, but on social media, it's other Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11 in the usual social media places, and certainly on the disasterpodcast.com site, where we hope you will come and let us know how you... if we gave you any good tips on this podcast and what else you would like to see us do. And Jamie, what about you?
Well, I'm under the handle PodMedic in most places, so check me out there. And, you know, like Sam said, we want to hear back from you. You want to hear more from Kevin? We like having Kevin on, and it would be a good idea to maybe make him a semi-regular here on the show. But maybe you have a topic you want him to talk about, or maybe you have a question you'd like him to answer. You got to leave a comment. That's all you got to do. Head over to disasterpodcast.com. Leave that comment with us here. We'll make sure Kevin gets the message. He can come back over there and leave a comment directly for you, or shoot us an email with the comment and we'll leave it there. But it's important to reach out and let our guests and let us know what you want to hear more of, so we can line up more of these great topics for you in the future over at disasterpodcast.com. And you can also sign up for our email newsletter there. It emails you whenever a new episode is released. So you get that email in your inbox and you can immediately go click the link and listen to the latest episode there. Sam, we haven't talked a lot about medicine specifically in this one, but preparedness and is part of that prevention aspect of medicine.
Yes, and I would say in general, recommending that people have some basic first aid training is probably a really good idea, because having at least a basic cache of first aid supplies, because like we talk about in earthquakes, it could be 72 hours before somebody gets to you, and we're talking about similar situations here. So certainly that is a big part of it. And as always, disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.